Healing. Healing is a very important topic for everyone, and healing covers everything under the sun, from the body to the mind to the soul to the spirit. And healing is a thought that is not on the direction you want it to go. That is the need for healing. The need for healing is a thought that's on the direction that you don't want to go. The thought may be an illness, the thought may be a broken leg, the thought may be anything, you know. We don't need to name these things. But these things could be anything. Now, people treat for this all over the world. Doctors would like to be very much more efficient in handling it, but they're not successful. Hospitals are built by the dozens all over the world. People go to the hospitals, and they say when they're in the hospital, they're more likely to get more disease than when they're at home, because the hospitals have people who have all these diseases, and they never get cleaned up from when they're cleaning up the hospital and stuff like that. So people have an attitude that disease, illness, problems of the body and the mind and the soul, so to speak, they have no control over them. And maybe they'll be lucky, they'll pray, and maybe some infinite power will bring about the healing for them. Some infinite power beyond what they can use. There's a power in this universe greater than I am, and I can use it. And so that's the way they think of God. God is something greater in this universe, and they can use God. And every time you think you can use God, you're blaspheming. Every time you say you can use God, you're saying that God is separate from you, that God is something outside of you. And we won't belabor the point that God is in you. So, the power is within you. All these things are within us. But even in our practitioner work, even in the New Thought work, even in the teachings of Jesus over 2,000 years, even in the teachings of the Buddha and the Lao Tse and Confucius and every other possible thinker on the face of the earth, and that's what they are. They're thinkers. Every other possible thinker on the face of the earth has relegated a power to something outside of them, to something outside of themselves. And they have said that that power is the power that does these things. When you are healed of something, you say, "Oh, thank you, God." And when the little child is not hit by the car, you say, "Thank God." When your husband comes home after the Twin Towers collapsed and he was at work, and he comes walking in the door, you say, thank God, you know, as though you're praising some outside beingness or entity for the security of your husband. I mean, what an idiot. The moment you hear the Twin Towers, you say, "I surround my husband with my pure white light of love." No. True, you should surround the building with a pure light, white love. You should surround the world with a pure white light of love. You should do all these things. It's true. But your immediate concern is your husband. Your immediate concern is the one you love, the one you know. All those other people in there, you love them and bless them, you know, but you don't know them. Do you go to their funerals? Do you send flowers to their families? Do you send condolences to their families? And do you say, "I'm sorry that your husband died or your wife died or what have you?" No, you don't. You don't really, and this sounds terrible, you don't really give a darn. You don't. And you can't. You cannot care about the entire universe except that you wrap it in your pure white light of love. And all is in divine order. Now that's enough. Leave it alone. Don't get involved in collapsing buildings, don't get involved in crashing airplanes, don't get involved in whatever things may come along, illness or wars or what have you. Don't get involved. Surround it with your pure white light of love. When you do that, then you have done it all. Why do we say this idiotic statement? There now is peace on earth, and it began with me. Who do we think we are? Well, we're the creator of our world, and that is in our world. And we create it in peace, in harmony, in love. Okay, now, back to healing. Healing is to return to your original purity and integrity. Now, our original purity and integrity is an absolutely beautiful functioning body, right? It's a body that is whole and perfect in every possible way. What do you conceive of as a perfectly beautiful, wonderful body? What do you conceive of? Do you look at models, modeling clothing or whatever, and do you say, wow, what a great body they have, what a great look they have? Do you look at movie stars and movie actresses, and you say, oh, I'd like to be like her, like him, you know? Well, that's fine and dandy. What you have done is to establish some sort of a criteria for what you think is good, what you think is a good body, what you think is a good mind, what you think is a good soul, what you think is a good being. Now, you have this exteriorly to yourself. Now, that is 100% garbage. Psychologists, psychiatrists, and social, civic, community, personal planners will disagree with me. But if we could teach ourselves, I like me, from childhood on, we would not try to emulate an ideal of a body. We would not try to emulate the perfect consciousness or thinking being, you know, the perfect mind. Oh, I like the way this person thinks and how this person acts and what this person says. Wow, they're great. That's true. You like what they say. All right, now, take another step. Do you like what they do? Do their words and their actions walk in step? Or are their actions different from their words? Not that they're bad. I mean, my goodness, it's better to have a person saying beautiful things than not saying beautiful things. It's even better to have them doing beautiful things. It's even better to have them thinking beautiful things, and their whole life is beautiful. Okay, now, we have spoken before about the idea that when you look at a person, you don't see them. You see their charisma. You see how much they like themselves. And when you see how much they like themselves, you see that radiated out through their eyes, through their skin, through their being. And you don't see, they might have eczema. They might have red face. They might have pimples. They might have boils. They might have who knows what. Take our biblical character, Job. His body was filled with boils. Did his friends abandon him? No. They stayed with him. They said, deny God and that'll all go away. The devil is playing a game with you. They knew that, you know. And he could not do that because he knew his reality. He knew that though he might be experiencing this outward experience, it may or may not have been his fault. He may have said to God, take me and do with me what you will. Let me be your handmaiden, if you will, your hand man, your right-hand man, you know. And if my life is to be an example of believing in principle, believing in God, then use me however you will. And that's theoretically the only thing we could conceive of that would allow such a story. Because such a noble man, such a noble-spirited man who believed 100% in the God that he believed in and followed him and would not deny him. What a marvelous being, you know. We could all benefit from learning to think and act in that way. Okay. We say we want healing in whatever areas of our life. And I think the travesty of this is when there are healers, quote healers, who go around healing people and doing very notable jobs, and then they say they cannot heal themselves. Because that's misusing the principle. Misusing the principle? That's the most silly thing in the world. The principle is all is whole and perfect. All. But you see, they have that little kink in their thinking. which says they cannot heal themselves or their families. They can only heal others. And because they have that little kink, they can't heal themselves and their family. Because they say their families cannot be healed by their word. And of course, that's what they experience. But you see, their teaching, no matter how wonderful it is still limited to the point of view that it says there's something that can't be done, that they can't do certain, and yet they do wonderful things. They're marvelous beings. Many people go to these healers and receive a healing, and that's glorious. Now, what about you and me? What about us and relative to our thinking about healing? What do we think about healing? Where does healing come from? Does healing come from our own inner thought? Does healing come from what we believe about ourselves? Or does healing come from some outside power? There's a power in this universe greater than I am, and I can use it. Is that where it comes from? If it comes from that, then we don't believe the teachings of Jesus. Jesus said, "The things I have done, you shall do also, and greater things than these." And we are doing them. Okay, now, we'll leave the religious part of this alone and just go into the purely psychological part. As a man thinketh in his heart, Jesus said that too, but of course that's just good psychology. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. So if we think in our heart, if we believe that we live in the temple of the living spirit, if we believe that every organ, action, and function of our body is whole and perfect, if we like ourselves enough to accept that, I am whole and perfect, I am worthy of God's blessing of wholeness and goodness, my gracious sakes, you know. That's what each of us are thinking. That's why we're not experiencing absolute wholeness in everything we do. Our body is like our beautiful brand new Mercedes or Rolls Royce or Ford or Chevy or whatever you want it to be. Our body is a brand new car given to us at our birth. Now, how did we treat our car? Did we use our car like a bumper car in the circus, in the fairgrounds where you bump into each other? Did we use our car as something that we just filled it with oil when we thought about it, but most often the oil was far too low or dirty? Did we take care of the gas? We used quality gas, the gas that it called for in the specs of the car to drive it? Did we wash it and polish it? Did we keep it up beautifully? Did we vacuum it underneath the seats as well as around where we can't see? Did we get? Did we go into the engine and dust it off and brush it down and wash it and make it, give it our love? That's like taking your genitals and washing them. There was a coach when I was in high school, and he said, "All right, now, you guys, now when you wash yourself. Now, when you dry yourself, dry your genitals last because they're dirty." And I thought to myself, my goodness sakes, what a thing to teach to people about any part of their body being dirty. Can you see how in certain religious philosophies, people think that sex is dirty and bad? When women have menstruation, that they must be set aside from the rest of the group because that is evil. You see, if ever, and these are classical teachings of cultures, and it's our culture too, our culture that teaches these things. You get a coach in there who has this attitude about sex or something like that, or about the body or any parts of it, and he calls it bad, you know? Well, and then he passes this on to young, eager minds who want to be perfect like their coach and who want to do everything their coach says because they want to be great athletes. And they believe this too, and they pass it on. Sometimes they overcome it, but most of the time not. Most of the time not. You see, if we want to love our body, we have to first love ourselves. Do you love this consciousness that you are? Do you love this being that thinks and acts and says all the wonderful things that you do all day long? Do you love this being that's singing, "Oh, what a beautiful morning"? Do you love this beautiful being that goes around finding good everywhere, the Pollyanna person that you are? Do you love this beautiful being that is a bubble, as Heinz said of Ellen, the bubble of campus, the enthusiasm of campus? Do you love this being that is so marvelous and so wonderful? That's you. It's me. Do you love that beyond all else? Which is what we should do. And do you see that being absolutely whole and perfect? Do you see that being in every single way a glorious, wonderful being, fulfilled in every way, not claiming illness when there is no illness, hypochondriac sort of thing, you know, not claiming weakness where there is no weakness, because we'll have more weakness if we claim it. Act as though you are, and you will be. Act as though you are the master of yourself, the master of your world, the master of your body, for that is the truth about you. Act as though you are the master of your thought. How many young people have we known who have come to us and said, Herb, I'd like to come and be part of your program. I love your program. I love what you teach, but I can't give up my cigarettes. And I couldn't be on campus and not smoke. I can't give up my desire for cocktails and for beer and for liquor. I couldn't give it up. It's just too important. I can't give up the condition I have of wanting to have narcotics and dope. You know, I can't give that up. And we say, hey, that's all right. You go and live your life as you must live your life. There's nothing we can do to force you to do anything, nothing we would do to force you. But the day comes when you are ready to take charge of yourself and determine what it is you want. Go join some group who loves to do the things you love to do. Participate in it, but watch them closely. And then see how they act and what their mental attitudes are and see what their life is. And is that what you really want for yourself? Because you look at the worst of them and say, that's where you are going. Because the worst of them is the best of them. It's the best user of narcotics and dope. And he is a fried egg. You know, he's nothing upstairs. You look at the best alcoholic there is, and he is blah, blah, blah in the gutter. Absolutely no love for himself, no concern for himself. I've worked with so many alcoholics over my years, and they would come to me and they'd say, I'm an alcoholic. And I said, great. I said, I have no place for you here. He said, but I thought you would help people. And I said, I help people who are choosing not to be alcoholics. Do you want to be an alcoholic? Or you want to not be? Oh, I want to not be. Well, then stop calling yourself something that you don't want to be. But the little boy calls himself a little boy all of his life. He's going to act like a little boy. When mother talks to her son and says, my little boy. Every time the boy comes around the mother, he acts like a little boy instead of like a man, like a responsible person. And when he starts acting like a responsible person around his mother, she says, what happened to my little boy? And the little boy says, I grew up into a man. I'm now a father of four children, teenagers, you know. And I have a business where I have 100 employees. And my wife and I have a wonderful marriage. You see, he put all these positive things in motion. And he has them. And his mother said, what happened to my little boy? In fact, they have songs about them. Where has my little boy gone? Where have all the flowers gone? Remember? And they grew up. They became that which they were, I don't like to say destined, but that which they were destined to become. They became that which they were programmed to become. They were programmed at all points to become a man, a woman, a divine being. You know, there are many people who are called into the spiritual field, you might say. And they tell us they're called to the ministry. And we say, that's nice. And they say, well, I steeled myself to the realization that I wasn't going to be rich. and that I wasn't going to be having this, and I was going to have a lot of people with problems around me all the time. And I say to them, and I have talked with many of them, I say, why do you want to have that? Because that's just the work of the Lord. The work of the Lord is with the sinners. And I say, if the work of the Lord is with the sinners, what is it that you're supposed to do with the sinners? Well, I'm supposed to help them up out of their degradation. Well, you cannot help them up out of their degradation if you're down in the pit with them. Lower a rope and pull them out. Well, I must go down and comfort them. Don't go down and comfort them. They'll make them feel happy to stay where they are. Pull them out. Bring them forth if they wish. If they want your teaching, your program, your blessing, let them come to you. Jesus said, let the little children come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. We must go to the psychiatrist, to the doctor. We must go to the counselor. The counselor doesn't come to us. Doctors don't make house calls anymore, virtually, you know. And why is that? What did the doctor do when he made house calls? He was compassionate. He had bedside manners, as they called it. And what was that? That was just sort of a caringness. Well, now, the doctor didn't need to do that. Mama did that. The family did that. The world did that. They came and cared. The doctor should come with a dynamic spritzer, hypodermic needle, and shoot you in the arm and say, I have now filled you with love. I have now filled you with wholeness. I have now filled you with divinity. Oh, really, doc? Oh, I like that. Give me some more. Now it's time for you to use that. Use it. Use it. But you see, we want to run away. And as we are running away, what are we doing? Now, it's okay for me to look at my watch, but not you. I say, it's okay for me to look at my watch, but not you. Now, first, but she did. You see, don't ever argue with me. When I catch you doing something that you feel a little guilty for doing, don't argue about it. Just say, oops, yep, I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't paying attention. And I would like it if all of you could find a teacher and rivet your attention on that teacher. Give that teacher 1,000,000,000% of your attention. All of your attention. All of your attention whenever you have that teacher with you. Because then the day comes when you will still enjoy the teacher, but you won't need the teacher. You won't do it because you'll be disciplined. You'll be one-pointed. What is it we like about Susan? Susan is Randy's wife. And Susan is a rather remarkable lady. When you talk to Susan, there is nobody else in the room. She looks you straight in the eye, gives you 100% of her attention, and talks to you as though there was nobody else in the room, and there may be dozens of people in the room. But she gives, do you like that? Oh my, do you like that? You think that is just wonderful. You think that is what it's all about. You think that is where it should be, and that is where it should be. Now, Susan is an ordinary lady, an extraordinary lady, to be sure. But she's got nothing more in her brain than you do. She has nothing more in her background than you do. Maybe she has chosen differently in certain thinking areas, but she's just like you. And yet, you look at her and you talk to her and you feel like you have just been treated to a very royal conference, a royal audience with the Queen. And she does not act superior to you. She does not act as though she can give you some great blessing. She is the blessing. In just one little thing, her 100% attention to what you're talking about. Now, she may not know what you're talking about. She may not understand you. She may not even care about what you're talking about, because you may be talking about things that are not pleasant. But she gives you her full attention. And then at the end of your full attention, she says, I understand you. And then she turns to someone else. But while you're with her, you have it. Now, if you can do that with any share or teacher or mentor that you ever deal with, you will be blessed beyond measure. Do you know why you're not experiencing the things you'd like to experience? It's because you only know half of it. Because you weren't paying attention when certain things were said. And so you didn't get the benefit from them. In fact, that happens quite often. That happens quite often to all of you. Ellen has a tendency to be more concerned about little love in his bed than she is about what's going on around her. Now, does little love need Ellen's attention? Does little love need to have Ellen be looking in on him all the time? Or could Ellen perhaps grow up and say, there now is peace on earth, and it began with me. Little love is comfortable in his bed, relaxed and at peace, healing perfectly, and it began with me. Could each of you be the master of yourself for just a little while and bring about the healings that are yours? And then what happens? What happens when the healings take place? Then you remember it no more. Then your wife doesn't know about it. Your husband doesn't know about it. Your children don't know about it. Your mother and father don't know about it. Your friends don't know about it. The hospital doesn't know. Nobody knows you were ever ill, because you have released it from your consciousness and you live in the state of being whole and perfect. And living in that state of being whole and perfect, whatever is contrary to that wholeness and perfect is not in your world, was not in your world, is not in your resume, in your autobiography, is not in your history. And we said the other day, a parallel universe, perhaps. Perhaps you have moved from the consciousness of being a pawn to the world that you've created, to being a master of yourself and the world you create. What do you want?
Oh, I want to be a master. Oh, heck yes, I want to be a master.
No, you don't. You want to be just who you are, and you are just who you are. Whatever that may be, however wonderful that may be, or however not quite perfect in the eyes of some that might be. So, you are just who you are, and there's nothing you can do about it. Because your thought is that, I like me just the way I am. You say, well, Herb, that's what you tell us too. Yes, I like me just the way I am. But who are you? Do you recognize that you're God? Do you recognize that you're divine? Do you recognize that you're whole and perfect? Do you recognize that you are the ideal of a human form, of a human being? And you don't know what that is. You will never know what the ideal human form and human being is. Because once you have stepped into that awareness, you will not know it or otherwise. You will be yourself and have fun. See, you don't know that your fingernails are dirty. You look at your fingernails and you clean them. But your fingernails are there. You don't know what this little speck here on the middle of your side and the back is doing, because you're not conscious of it. But is it whole and perfect? By and large, our body is whole and perfect. Some little thought goes wild in there. We call it the cancer. And it goes eating around where it shouldn't. But it's our choice by our bad thoughts about ourselves. You know, our thoughts. You see, The higher they are, the harder they fall, isn't it? The bigger they are, the harder they fall. The more you know truth, the more you know the principle, the more you know of reality. If you ever violate that, then you're in hell. If you know you should not be driving over 55 or 65 or 75, whatever the rules are of the highway, and you drive it, you know you're violating that law, and you are just attracting the enforcement officers to come along and say you are violating the law. You're just attracting that. You say, well, they didn't do it. Be careful. The more often you get away with it, the more flippant you are about it, and then pretty soon you become very responsive to it, and something terrible happens to you. Because each time, if you don't follow the rules, and you are chastised for not following it, it gets worse and worse and worse. And finally, it becomes death. Now, why does any person on the face of the earth experience death? We experience death because that's the final insult to our divinity. As a divine being, we immortalize our body. As a human being, we demortalize our human body. We make it mortal. We make it so that it dies, so that we leave it behind and pass it off. Now that's not bad. Don't ever take it from that point of view. But you have come here to play the chess game of life. And in the chess game of life, it's not to kill the king. It's not to slaughter anybody. You take people out of the game because they are moved out of the game. The pawns, the rooks, the knights, the whomever are taken out. But the thing is, the game of life is not to destroy anything. But it is to prove who is the master of themselves. And so if you lose in your chess game, it's because you were not extremely attentive. And you know what to be extremely attentive means? It means that in everything, you are the winner. It doesn't mean that you win according to the rules that other people put on the game, but in everything you are the winner. In everything, in your thought, you are a master. In your ideals, you're master. In your world, you're master. In your body, you're master. And that's what we're talking about. A body that is whole and perfect, a body that is fantastic, a body that is magnificent eternally. Now, is this what you want for yourself? If this is what you want to experience, well then, stop playing in the backyard of the neighbor children who are naughty children, and play in your own backyard, or play in the backyard of the children who are nice children who are raised like you are, and you are raised to know, I live in my eternally perfect ideals, spirit, mind, and body. My body is the temple of the living God. Every thought I think is a divine thought. All is in divine right action right now. You see, if we live in this consciousness, we will not run around with people who are contrary to our consciousness. We will not run around with conditions that are contrary to our consciousness. We will indeed be whole and perfect, and we will not become. We will be what we are. We return to our original purity and integrity. And we are whole and perfect now. If you're ready for that, that means you take responsibility. That means you do it now. And you don't ever feel sorry for yourself. You don't ever moan and groan. You just put the right causes in motion. And you are the happiest being in the universe because you're whole and perfect right now. If you want it, accept it. It's yours. It's wonderful, isn't it? Think on these things. They're not something that I am saying new to you. I'm merely repeating universal principles. I, too, live by those universal principles, but my work is to share them with you, and I love it. And it's what I chose to do. And you can, too, if you wish, or whatever else you wish. So, I love you. I love you. I love you.